You're listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where we bring you the latest travel news, tips, and tricks each week to help you save money and travel better. I'd love it if you'd share the show with a friend. We love helping more people travel better, and that begins with you. If you're enjoying the show, share it with a friend. Also, be sure to drop us a line and let us know who we should have on for future episodes and what questions we can help you answer. You can email me, ed@pizzainmotion.com, and you can find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram by searching Miles to Go. First up this week, we've got Angelina from Angelina Travels back on the podcast. Hyatt announced their first wave of integration with small luxury hotels of the world. They talked about this partnership back in the summertime. These are properties you guys are definitely going to want to know about. Luxury hotels, very interesting hotels, really helps expand Hyatt's international footprint, and Angelina stops by to help you get started learning about them. After that, we've got Zach from Monkey Miles on the show. This is his first time on Miles to Go, though he was a guest on my Now Boarding podcast just a few weeks ago. With some rumors out there about Alaska Airlines possibly becoming part of the One World Alliance, Zach joins us to talk about what he loves most about Alaska Airlines, including some award chart sweet spots. Let's get this week's show started. The Miles to Go podcast is brought to you in part by No Jet Lag. Don't let jet lag get you down. Flight crews, sports teams, and business executives around the world sing the praises of No Jet Lag. No Jet Lag is the leader in jet lag management for the last 25 years. Don't let jet lag spoil your next trip. Visit nojetlag.com to get yours today. Back on the Miles to Go podcast with Angelina, back from Angelina Travels. It's been a bit of time since we've had her on, but she's been talking about the recent changes to the Hyatt program, where some of the small luxury hotels of the world have joined up and are available for redemption, and I wanted to bring her on to discuss her thoughts on them. How are you doing today, Angelina?
Hey, Ed. Doing very well. Thanks for bringing me back on. It's always a pleasure. Especially now we get to talk about Hyatt. I know you and I are huge Hyatt fans, so this is really exciting. In terms of the partnership, I think this is awesome news for Hyatt because it certainly expands the footprint in areas of Europe that they didn't have a presence before. So I'm very excited about using waypoints in new places.
Yeah, I think I'm just as excited about it as you are. And I think, you know, on top of the fact that we're both Hyatt fans, you and I both sort of balance between the family travel side of things and the luxury travel side of things. And as I look down this list, the vast majority of them looked like they were luxury level properties, and not that Hyatt doesn't have those now, but it's pretty cool to think of, you know, hey, you know, they filled in half a dozen new dots on the map in, say, Italy, my favorite country to go to, and they did it with properties that look exceptional.
Oh yeah, I mean, I checked the room rates of some of these properties just to play around, and you know, in peak season, they've exceeded over $800, $900. So even with that new category that they added, the category 8 for 40,000 points, which seems a little intimidating when you hear about it. But if you think about it in terms of value, if you're redeeming 40,000 points for a $900 room, I think that's a great use of Hyatt points.
Yeah, I do too. And when I think about it in terms of, you know, how SPG had always had, you know, some of those really awesome properties in some very aspirational destinations, whether it was, you know, Santorini or, you know, the Danieli in Venice or the St. Regis in Rome, you know, Hyatt really steps up to the plate here with these first chunk of 54 hotels that are all, maybe not all, because I haven't looked at all 54 in depth, but the 15 or 20 that I spent time looking at all seemed like really great, high-end, expensive sort of redemptions. And as you mentioned, there was definitely some teeth gnashing on the 40,000 point category that Hyatt rolled out. But as I look at some of these rates, you know, gosh, to be able to use my Hyatt points to go to Santorini, which, you know, wasn't on the map before, and have other options other than just the SPG properties, you know, that's a win for me.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, actually, I think that Hyatt was very fair when it came to categorizing these properties, because I thought initially that every single property would be a category 8, the new small luxury hotel property that they just added. But I was looking at the list, and there actually are about 20% of the properties that, you know, there are category 4 or under. So you can still use your anniversary free night at those properties, and you can redeem for less than 15,000 points per night. That's actually really generous in terms of, you know, adding a partner on board and still being fair with point redemptions for the, you know, Hyatt members themselves.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, when you get down into those lower level redemptions, I think you, when you couple that with the fact that the, at least the initial list, and to be clear, we are hoping that there's a lot more to come here, because Small Luxury Hotels of the World features over 500 total hotels in their program. And we're getting just a small sampling of them, although we appear to be getting a good sampling. It's, you know, as you look down the list, London's there, Rome is there, Venice is there, you know, so those are all great places to see on the list. But then there's cities that are just, you know, out of the way places that that I think it's great to have a dot on the map. You know, Marbella in Spain, mm-hmm. You know, properties off the beaten path in places like Belgium and Corsica and Versailles, where I think when you talk about folks who like to knock the Hyatt program, they say, well, I can't find a Hyatt in every place I want to go. And that's still the case. There's not one in every city, you know, obviously scale wise versus where Marriott is. But we really do pick up things not just in your typical tourist destinations around Europe that mean folks can really get off the beaten path here.
Yeah, exactly. You know, especially, you know, people would like to go to Greece in the summer. Santorini is a very, very expensive honeymoon place. I was playing around with the rates at one of the luxury properties. I think it was the Secret Suites and Spa in Santorini. And I just played, you know, for July 4th weekend. And it was like, seriously, over $900 per night. And I think that's a great way to even get away with your spouse or honeymoon. You know, it just gives you so many more possibilities outside of a traditional Hyatt, and it's just a nice way to expand your horizons with your points.
Yeah, and I actually was just helping some folks plan a trip recently to the Greek islands, and I will say that you know, availability was tight when I looked at some of the typical SPG properties that would normally recommend to folks. So I think having more aspirational destinations for people to redeem their points for, and you know, now that Marriott and SPG are merged, certainly there's this ability to transfer, say, like Chase Ultimate Rewards to Marriott and use them at some of these SPG properties. But you know, for those folks who may collect Ultimate Rewards as a primary program, they've also got the path now where they can take those points to Hyatt and get to the Santorinis of the world as well.
Exactly. And also, Ed, I wanted to talk about the benefits that actually were very, very surprisingly generous. If you notice, they have some great reciprocal benefits when you use your Hyatt points or stay at any of these participating small luxury hotels. The benefits are extended to all members, not, you know, regardless of your status. So what I thought was interesting is that they're offering complimentary breakfast, late checkout, you know, up to 2 p.m. I think that's super cool for any Hyatt member. So you don't have to just, you know, be limited to being a globalist and having those perks. So I think that's nice.
Yeah, I was surprised by that as well. And it's funny because I know that there are some folks in our, you know, Miles community that are always hoping for more. And I get it.
Yeah.
The way some folks painted it was, you know, gosh, you know, a continental breakfast, you know, as a globalist, I expect more. And I guess that's one view. But I was really surprised where they said, you know, you don't even have to have elite status in the World of Hyatt program. If you're a World of Hyatt member, you're going to get free continental breakfast. You're going to get free Wi-Fi, and you've got the chance to potentially score a room upgrade or late checkout. You know, for the everyday traveler who isn't a hardcore business traveler and doesn't have status, those benefits really do add up in value. I mean, if I know that I can leave my bags in my room and head to the beach on the last day of our trip instead of having to book another night because I got a 2 p.m. late checkout, you know, that's money back in my pocket.
Yes, and it's a huge savings on food. I know lots of these resorts in these parts of town are, you know, breakfast can be up to $50 a person. So that's a great substantial savings right there.
Yeah, and for me, with, you know, and you're the same, we both have kids. And so if I'm traveling with the family, knowing that I can get continental breakfast, I mean, the reality of it is that there aren't too many mornings that my kids are eating a big, you know, full American breakfast, if you will, when we're traveling. They generally tend to be grazers. And so a continental breakfast is going to check most of the boxes for us on most of our trips. And, you know, maybe there's sometimes we'll want to go out for a full breakfast or we'll want to pie up to a full breakfast. But I think, you know, for us at least, a continental breakfast is going to check the box 75% of the time.
Yeah, I agree. And you can still earn your typical 5 points per dollar on money spent at these resorts. And you can earn an additional 4 points per dollar with the World of Hyatt credit card if you have that as well.
Yeah, I think that they did a really good job trying to make these properties feel like a normal Hyatt because on top of, as you mentioned, the earning sequence there, you know, if you're paying for a night at these participating SLH hotels, and we want to be, you know, make sure we're specifying that. It's not every SLH hotel right now. It's this initial list of 54, and we'll link to the list on Angelina's post on this. But if you're paying to stay at those, you'll earn elite status just like you would anywhere else. And so whether it's a paid or award night, you're earning your way towards elite status when you're staying at SLH properties, just as if you were staying at the, you know, the Hyatt Place at Newark Airport.
Exactly. And, you know, I think Hyatt this year has really done some really great things in terms of expansion. You know, they just had the Exhale membership, you know, the Exhale partnership.
Yeah. And we're hoping for Two Roads, the hospitality transaction to close, because that would be another 70-ish, you know, nice, upscale, interesting hotels that would be added to the Hyatt family.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what's in store for the rest of the year in 2019 as well.
Yeah, I can't wait either. I really hope the Two Roads thing happens, especially because, you know, there's a pirate ship in one of those hotel collections that I would absolutely love it to know that I could take a cruise on what essentially looks like a pirate ship with my Hyatt points.
Oh, wow. I didn't even see that. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome, but we still got to wait on that one. Thanks a bunch for hopping on with me to talk through this. I know that we're, you know, certainly hopeful that there'll be more hotels coming out in the future, but I think so far with what we've got for an announcement, it's a great start to the SLH partnership. You know, when you're not hopping on the podcast with me, tell folks where they can find you.
Sure. You can check out my blog, angelinatravels.com, and I like to hang out on Instagram, and I'm also Angelina Travels on there, so I hope to see you.
Awesome. Hey, thanks a bunch for being on. Hopefully we can have you on again soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Ed. Have a good one.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Hey, well, we're taking a break from the show. I wanted to tell you about a new travel podcast that one of my friends just launched. The We Travel There podcast covers a different destination each week in 30 minutes or less. The host, Lee Huffman, finds experts on each area and does a deep dive into each destination. We Travel There will help you find the best surfing spots on Oahu and the Penguin Parade in Melbourne, Australia. He's already covered a couple of my favorite places to visit, like Hong Kong and Vancouver. Find We Travel There on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you find great podcasts. Now, back to the show. Back on the Miles to Go podcast with Zach from Monkey Miles. I've had Zach on my other podcast, Now Boarding, probably about, I don't know, 5 or 6 weeks ago, I guess, Zach?
Yeah, it was, roughly. Yep.
Yeah, but we haven't had you on Miles to Go yet, and I've been, you know, obviously following your blog and that cute little stuffed animal that you carry around with you, and you know,
appreciates the compliment.
He's all over the place, guys. You got to see him; he's very cute. So you wrote recently about Alaska Airlines, and how you know, there's some rumors out there about whether they're going to fold themselves into Oneworld, which is the alliance that American Airlines and British Airways headline. And I thought you had some really good notes in there about some of your favorite Alaska redemptions. So we wanted to have you on to talk about those things. We haven't talked a lot about Alaska on the podcast, and it does represent a value for a lot of folks if they're willing to do a little bit more work, if you will.
Yes, that's for sure. There's certainly more work involved. There's more speculation in terms of finding the award availability as well, which I think rewards consumers that have a little bit more knowledge or are willing to like use an award booking service or something like that to land like a Cathay Pacific redemption, because they don't show that availability specifically like on their sites, and you have to call in. But yeah, there's some great sweet spots in the Alaska chart that I've certainly taken advantage of.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, the way I usually describe, you know, the world of Alaska to folks is sort of like, you know, either before the, you know, the internet had big search engines like Google, or Or if folks, understand what Matrix ITA software is versus, say, using Google Flights or Expedia. As you said, it takes a little bit more work, but, there's a number of folks in the blogging world that also comment on the fact that because it takes a little bit more work, there are less people that are trying to pursue awards and some of the, I won't say they're fringe programs because I don't consider airlines like Qantas or Finnair, fringe programs, but it's not American or Delta or United. So that work can pay off with some pretty cool awards.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, I think it's great for programs that aren't a part of like the big airlines in the U.S. and you're looking at taking some pretty fantastic trips internationally. There's a lot of areas that you can really if that's something you are interested in, that you should be trying to utilize the Alaska program because there's some pretty outsized value there.
Yeah, and American and Alaska used to have a much closer relationship than they do now. And that's sort of what I think is interesting about the potential for them becoming a oneworld partner, because Alaska was, almost like the fifth Beatle, if you will, for quite a while when it came to American Airlines.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they sort of turned into frenemies. I think there was a period of time I was an executive platinum with American and decided to switch over to Alaska, and the time that I did my status match to their top tier MVP Gold 75, I think it was within like 6 or 8 weeks, it was announced that American and Delta would dissolve their partnership. And I was like, okay, well, there goes some ways I was going to rack up some Alaska miles. And then American downgraded all of the benefits, the reciprocal benefits that Alaska elites would get on American flights. And then the accumulation, the way you could earn points on Alaskan by flying on American was also sort of decimated. So like they, as you said, like they're definitely friends and there are some benefits and you can earn some miles. It's just it takes a lot more work. I've had to do some creative things to figure out how I can fly on a more direct routing. My family's in Indianapolis and I live in Los Angeles. And so there's a direct flight on American. If I want to fly in Alaska, I used to be able to go through San Francisco, and now they've eliminated the San Fran to Indy route and I have to go up through Seattle. But Alaska will sell a code shared flight on American, and so I can rack up some miles that way. But a lot of the routings that American flies that you used to be able to credit to Alaska are no longer available. They just, you won't earn any miles on them at all.
Yeah. And if you are a West Coast guy, if you're flying to the West Coast, Alaska, part of the reason why I loved having them as part of American's partnerships, because I was an exec plat for a decade, was they have a ton of connectivity up and down the West Coast, especially after having absorbed Virgin.
Yes.
But even before that, for me, it was, living out on the East Coast, Dulles, I didn't have a whole lot of ways to get to Seattle, for example, on American metal only. But if I could get to LA, between the handful, and this goes back a number of years, I don't know how many frequencies they have today, but American probably had 3 or 4 flights to Seattle a day from LA, but Alaska had, 10.
Tons.
And
yeah.
So you had essentially a shuttle service going from LA to Seattle. And so the combination of the two was really great. And I certainly, certainly like to see it come back, and not just for the partners, and the ability to redeem miles with some cool programs. But I think that it really helps build out some parts of the American Airlines network that are lacking now for folks to move around the country.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it would definitely benefit customers much more than it would probably benefit certain airlines' bottom lines, but. Yeah, I agree with you.
All right, so for folks who aren't familiar with Alaska, let's give them a couple of examples of some awards that you think are a great value for them that they can find in the mileage plan program.
Sure. So I think probably the one that's blogged about the most is the Cathay Pacific from U.S. to Asia for 70,000 miles in first class. I mean, it's hands down the best redemption, I think, out there, especially because Alaska sells their miles all the time for roughly 2 cents, give or take a little bit, which means you can buy that ticket, which, retail is ridiculous, somewhere in the five figures, for like $1,400, which is still not chump change, but to experience Alaska, to experience Cathay Pacific first class for for that amount of miles. And especially if you're an elite in Alaska, you're just, you're making them hand over fist. That's an incredible experience and a really cool way to fly to Asia. And you can also, Alaska's program allows a free stopover. So you can, you know, fly into Hong Kong, stop for 2 or 3 days, check that out, and then go on further into Asia. And you get sort of more bang for your buck. So that's one of my tops. And I think another one, which I think I flew earlier this year, and I don't know which program, I guess, that you used, but you flew Qantas first. Was it last year?
It was last year, and I went the American Airlines.
American route. Way, yeah.
Yeah.
So I used, I redeemed Qantas, or I redeemed Alaska Miles for Qantas first earlier this year. To fly first class from the U.S. To Australia, and that was 70,000 as well. And I actually paired everything together and flew. I flew first class in Qantas from L.A. to Sydney, and was in Australia for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and sort of bumped around. And then was able to just, that was 70,000 Alaska. And then to get back, I incorporated their stopover in Hong Kong and was able to fly all on Cathay Metal from, I flew out of Brisbane and flew Brisbane on their A350 in their brand new business class, had a stopover in Hong Kong, and then flew back in Cathay first. My girlfriend and I actually did it together. So we were able to land 2 seats on the entire routing from the US through Australia, through Asia back.
Oh, wow.
And that final, yeah, it was incredible. I couldn't believe that it all released. And that was 80,000 to go from Brisbane to Hong Kong, Hong Kong to LA. It was 80,000 Alaska miles each, including the stopover and the taxes and fees. I think it was less than $200 each, all in, maybe even less than 150. I had to go back and pull the numbers, but I mean, like, where else can you do all of that for, you know, 150,000 miles? Pretty incredible.
Yeah. And you're talking about two airlines that I think, you know, we talk about comparing them to the US carriers are just head and shoulders above in terms of customer service. I have not had the good fortune to fly first class on Cathay, but I've flown business class on Cathay, and I've flown both business and first on Qantas. And, you know, gosh, I mean, the service element is night and day to the big, U.S. carriers. They know how to take care of their customers.
Yeah, the only thing that I can really relate it to is that they at least make you feel as though, and I tend to just, you know, suspend disbelief, but it's like that there is a joy that they get out of providing service, and like that's something that is, where do you really get that anywhere? I think my travels to Asia, I've noticed that region of the world tends to deliver a higher level of customer service than anywhere else I've kind of been.
Yeah.
And that spills over into the airlines. But you know, I didn't know what to expect with Qantas, and that's fun. It's kind of one of those like unicorn redemptions, because they don't really release in the same. Cathay is very predictable in how they are going to release seats, and you can sort of anticipate. Qantas, it's like, you know, there's at least I haven't been able to figure out any sort of rhyme or reason as to when they release seats or how they release seats, and when not just one popped up but two on a trip that we needed to take to Australia, and they came up like on the days that we needed to travel. I was like, oh my god, I can't believe, like, you know, I'm destined to be a blogger because of this happening. Like, I have to do this. Then it was, and I think Qantas is one of those where it's highly underrated as to how good that service was, and to have had the good fortune to fly Cathay first, kind of in the same overall trip, and see it sort of like, you know, head to head. It was. I was really, really impressed with the service of Qantas and just the sheer space that you get. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And the bedding is incredible. It's like high thread count, and, you know, you're getting fancy champagne and all that good stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of upsides to it. And I think one of the reasons why some folks might not pay attention to Alaska, well, I mean, I guess a couple of reasons. First off, there's still just a sheer number of folks I know who don't think Alaska flies anywhere but to Alaska. But also, too, they don't, you know, they do have, They do have a credit card. It doesn't generally have a huge sign-up bonus. So, you know, earning points in Alaska for, say, you know, family travelers or casual travelers can be a little bit more cumbersome. And, you know, at least from where I sit, while I love the fact that they have a great network on the West Coast, you know, similar to Southwest for me living in D.C., it would be hard for me to rely on Alaska as my everyday airline, if you will, flying around the continental U.S.
Yes, I agree with that. I think even looking at all of the experts on boarding area, and a lot of us talk about Alaska Mile, you know, Alaska's program and how great it is. It's kind of boils. It's like Nomos Coach puts out a lot of stuff about Alaska, but they're based in Seattle, so it's like, I mean, it just makes complete sense for them to be flying a lot on Alaska. But even for me, like on the West Coast, I pivoted to Alaska primarily because of how rich the program was. And I knew that I would, with my significant other being from the UK, I knew I would be flying internationally a considerable amount. And we tend to try and plan our travels to buy round trip tickets that sort of originates in continental Europe and some of these places, you know, like Stockholm or Dublin, or sometimes Edinburgh will have really cheap business round trip business class tickets. And so that was one of the things I think about them getting folded into One World was, right now, you know, I'm buying a BA ticket either through BA or some consolidator and then crediting it to Alaska. And that's how I've been able to continue to get status over actually flying Alaska domestically. And I think that's part of the strategy of what Alaska is trying to do with getting folded in, or the rumor of being a connect. And I would imagine, given the insanely rich bonuses that are being handed out to Alaska loyalists flying on BA, that BA would be one of those sponsors to get them into connect, because they already, you know, it's one of the two airlines that, you know, if you're flying through London, like, you know, if you're gold or gold 75, you're going to have access to the galleries lounge and stuff like that. So I think that I would buy my tickets if Alaska had competitive pricing. Like, I would certainly buy them through alaskaair.com rather than buying them on the partner, especially if I could buy the code shared flights, you know, however I'm routing. If that was on Alaska Metal, that would be great too. So I think that's part of their strategy. And also, when you say, you know, people have the presumption that it's, you know, that they just fly to Alaska or it's very difficult to fly them, like, their route network is considerably smaller than the, you know, the other big three. So it's kind of, it is more difficult. And I think that's, I pointed out at some point in the article that, like, I think that they would be silly if they did consider a devaluation at this point. I mean, they, you know, at some point, I guess they will have to, but, you know, the reason, at least for me, that I'm willing to kind of jump through hoops is so that I can fly Cathay first, or that I can, you know, do these things that are more experiential, and it'd be worth the added time and maybe a little bit of added cost to stay loyal to them. So,
I think, you know, once you get east of the Mississippi, it's sort of like Southwest. It's very situational based on where you live. But there definitely are reasons for folks who are not, you know, knee deep neck deep experts like nerds like Zach and I. But, you know, it's something that you should definitely consider looking at, because there are some great paths to some great airlines. Zach, thanks for coming on Miles to Go for the first time. Hopefully we'll be able to have you back on again soon.
Yeah, I would love to.
In the meantime, when you're not hanging out with me on the podcast or hanging out in LA, tell folks where they can find you.
Yeah, so you can check me out on the blog, so www.monkeymiles.com, or I'm pretty present on Insta, so that's at @monkey_miles.
And if you check him out on Insta and you see a bunch of pictures of a stuffed animal, don't worry, you're in the right place.
That's the right spot, yep.
Awesome, thanks again for being on, Zach.
Hey, had a blast, thank you.
All right, we'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Back to wrap up this week's episode of the Miles to Go podcast with the final two pennies. So I got a bit of a laugh as I was finishing up the episode this week. I'll definitely link to the blog post in the show notes. But a good friend of mine, Glenn, who writes the Military Frequent Flyer blog, wrote a post entitled "Tips to Get My Friend Ed to Hawaii." And he talks about the fact that I humble brag about the fact that I've never been to Hawaii. You know, I love Glenn to death, and I got a huge kick out of reading his post. I won't say it's a humble brag for Hawaii. I certainly don't see it as a badge of courage or honor, if you will. I assume that Hawaii is a beautiful destination, and I've heard so many great stories from people. And I loved the way Glenn mocked me on ways to make sure that I got my family there. And while I'm not scared of Hawaii, Hawaii's what's next. You know, it's just in our life, our family's travel life, next has a very flexible meaning, if you will. You know, we frequently change trips, you know, places that we think we're going to go, get moved around and shuffled based on any number of things, you know, sports, kids' activities, things that they want to do. For example, my son, you know, his one of his great friends from school moved to Spain last year. His parents relocated there. And it's very reminiscent of a number of years ago when one of our daughter's best friends moved to Germany, and we ended up in Salzburg to visit them. And so now Charlie, our son, really wants to go to Spain to visit his friend. And so we're, you know, sort of circling that for next year at some point. We've already got Australia outlined. And, you know, we'll definitely get to Hawaii at some point. I wouldn't say it's a priority or not a priority. I will say it's a priority for me not to fly 10 hours from the East Coast in coach. You know, color me a baby for that, if you will, but much more comfortable sitting up front. It's been an interesting week of travel for me. I was overseas in Paris with two great friends. I actually was asked to perform their wedding ceremony, which was an unbelievable honor. Back home now to a couple of sick kids and a sick wife trying to mend everybody and get them on the road to recovery. And I had a ton of fun putting together this week's episode and was literally just getting ready to wrap it up and saw Glenn's post about Hawaii and couldn't help but call attention to it and just how much I appreciated him giving me a good laugh. Glenn, I can assure you that Hawaii is on the list. It's what's next. I just can't tell you which next it is. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed being here for the show. If you have questions I can help answer, I hope that you'll shoot them to me via email or social media so that we can answer them in a future episode. You can email me at ed@pizzainmotion.com, and you can find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, by searching for the Miles to Go podcast. If you're enjoying the show, I hope you'll tell a friend. That's the best way we get to grow the show, and we definitely want to grow it and help more people travel better. Thanks again for listening this week. Big thanks to Angelina and Zach for making it a great show, and a special thanks to Glenn for giving me a good laugh as I put this week's episode to bed. We're already putting together a great episode for next week. But until then, we've got miles to go.